Oh, as soon as we hit record. What's that? Delivery number 4. Okay, well, we should be free of deliveries for at least 25 minutes. Right, okay, hello. Welcome to episode 11, I think, of the Keto Chapters. We've already tried to film this once.
The dogs are joining us.
It didn't work out. Okay, the dogs might make another appearance. Right, so, we tried to film this once before, and... the audio was rubbish, so here we are again. And the theme was what we wish we knew. So there were two themes, but it's kind of... It started off as what we wish we knew when we first started, but when we were just planning it out, it's turned into the three steps that we took.
Well, it's just something that I was thinking about this morning, because it's something that I talk about a lot when we do the workshops, and people, when they sort of starting it, they're in a desperate rush to get... to do it right is the common phrase, but then to desperate rush to get into ketosis, or desperate rush to sort of to be where everybody else is, and yet there is no rush. And if you rush something, you're probably not learning how it's going to work for you properly.
And now we have Coco whining to get
Coco.
Up. Come up then. Come here. Just sit there. I don't think... Oh, YouTube can see RG's face.
Not really.
He was blending into the oven.
There you go.
There's one.
There's Coco. That's the little one.
That's great for an audio podcast, you know.
Yeah.
She's too far away from the microphone. You can't hear her. So anyway, what were you saying?
It just struck me today that sort of, you know, people... expectations are sometimes set based on... other people's success.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't understand how to live the lifestyle, and if you don't go through the process of understanding the things that are going to work for you and the things that you might need to cut out, then how are you going to work out whether this is a lifestyle you can maintain? So, starting point, you know, we get a lot of people joining the group saying, right, where do I start? You start by getting rid of the big starchy carbs and the junk, because they're going to have the biggest impact on lowering your carbs. And when you do that, you essentially, the benefit of that, you're not saying for everyone, but obviously the majority of people will see a reduction in bloating and a reduction in water weight. So there's usually a fairly instant impact on that.
That's
part of the whoosh. There can be other whooshes, but that's the first whoosh. That's the bit, you know, and this is, again, when we talk about starting and not trying to get obsessed about counting carbs, counting grams of anything, counting calories, actually.
Or numbers in general.
Yeah, numbers in general, but actually just... focusing on removing the things that are potentially causing all the bloating and the water retention, and initially just switching that for lots of lower carb veggies. So switching pasta for cabbage, switching standard white rice for cauliflower rice, switching potatoes for swede. There's a huge... decrease in the amount of carbs there just by doing that. Not even talking about volume of food, as in not trying to reduce the amount you eat, just changing the food. Something that we say so many times, you can't change your habits until you've changed your eating, as in what you're eating, the food that you're putting on your plate. If you want to change the way you eat, i.e., I've seen it again today, somebody sort of saying that she only had one meal yesterday, and this is, in her words, I used to be sort of, you know, a grazer.
Mm.
She used a different word, but, you know. but somebody that would eat constantly throughout the day and has now got to a position where she's only eating, and certainly yesterday, was only one meal. And you can't get there by just trying to force yourself and using an app to go, right, okay, I'm going to go from 200 grams of carbs to 20 grams of carbs. You have to, it should be a natural progress where your appetite changes. And it can't change whilst you're eating the big, white, starchy carbs and the processed foods and the junk foods and the sugar.
I think even by just eliminating the big four, you know, bread, rice, pasta, potatoes. You then...
You've got to add in five. You've got to add in junk. You've got to add in that.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most people, when they sort of decide, and this goes with any lifestyle, when they decide, I am going to be good, therefore, I want to lose weight.
Kind of stuff,
they automatically go, well, I know junk food's no good for me, therefore I'll cut that out. It's just that our teachings over the last 30 years or whatever have always leaned us to say, yes, drop the junk food, but also now drop the fat and increase the carbs, because you're going to need to eat loads of, you know, white starchy carbs and calories from there, because that's your energy source. So there's the difference. Is yes, we, I think both equations, whether you go down the low fat route or the low carb route, both equations would say junk food is the bit that definitely
for different reasons.
Yeah, whereas what we're sort of saying is that, you know, if you're trying to go low carb to start with, and that's the point really, is that you don't need to go from 200 to 20 in a day. Your body's not ready for it. It's going to take a while for you to transition to get to this, go through the low carb bit and find out how you feel as you're coming off carbs.
That's what I was going to say, because when you get rid of all of that, you then start to notice how you react to certain foods. Like because you're not used to now bloating with every meal, you get kind of surprised when you do bloat after eating a particular vegetable or something.
Yeah.
And then you can start to think about how it works for you.
There are some green veggies that will cause bloating issues.
So cauliflower,
yeah, and they're one of the things. You know, we swap a lot of our, certainly at the beginning, we'll swap a lot of our sort of starches, the potato and the rice, for broccoli and cauliflower.
It's like that meme. If cauliflower can be pizza, you can be anything.
Yeah. But some people will still bloat with that. And that's, you know, it's then looking at, is there an alternative to cauliflower and broccoli? Yes, there's loads. There's tons of it. So yeah, I think one of the things that for anyone starting out to remember is that it isn't a race to 20.
And as much as 20 is a number that everyone recognises,
it's a generic number.
It's not a magic number for everyone. Obviously, it depends on the goals.
For me, step one, starting point, is just ditch those sort of big starches, because they're going to help you feel less bloated and less lethargic. They're going to help you feel like you're actually transitioning without the shock value of suddenly getting down to 20 grams of carbs and not understanding how your body's going to feel. You know, if your body's been used to using carbs all of its life as a fuel source, you're not fat adapted in the space of 2 days. You're not even potentially creating ketones, you know. So you need to just give yourself a bit of breathing space. It's you know, forcing yourself down to 20 grams of carbs is no different to a crash and burn diet, you know. Well, big calorie restriction
it's
diet.
It's kind of like, it's the same thing as, so setting yourself the goal of going straight to 20 is the same as saying to yourself, I'm going to lose a stone in the first month.
Yeah.
And we always say, but does your body say that?
And actually, and going off that, actually, if somebody going all the way down to 20 and then macro calculating a 5, let's say 20-75 split, so you've suddenly gone from 50, well, maybe 60-70% of your calories coming from carbs to now 70-75% of your calories coming from fat, does your body actually, does your body feel good? Consuming that amount of fat? You don't.
No.
You don't. But anybody starting out...
It's one of the mistakes we made when we first started out, when we were like, right, okay, butter, cream, everything.
So somebody starting out and making that switch will then go, oh my God, I feel awful on keto. Well, yeah, because your body's...
I almost gave up.
Your body's not ready for 75% of its calories from fat. So, yeah, for me, first step, big starches, junk food... And don't try and change the habit. As in, don't try and force yourself to not have breakfast because other people are not having breakfast. Oh, the standard breakfast. You know, we all have our breakfast. It's the first meal of the day. But, you know, for some people, it's still eating at 6, 7, 8 in the morning when they get up. And for others, it's eating at 10, 11, 12, or not through till the afternoon. So that doesn't happen. That change of appetite, that change of structure doesn't happen whilst you're still craving carbs. Yeah?
Yeah.
So for me, step one, remove that. Step two is when you see the appetite change, that's when you start to understand that, or start to break down, focus more on what you're eating. So you then start, if you only now got two opportunities to feed yourself the right nutrition, then you don't have the spare capacity in meals to feed yourself non-essential things. So non-essential things for me are, a lot of people will like to sort of start the day, especially when they start out, bowl of Greek yogurt, some berries and a bit of granola.
Homemade
there
granola,
you go.
Not store-bought granola.
Yeah, homemade granola. So that's an option of using, of going from the big carbs down to a lower carb. You could easily get a meal like that into a 40 to 50 gram carb day. But when your appetite reduces and you only got two meals, what you don't want to do is make one of them a bowl of Greek yogurt with fruit and granola, because it's too low in protein, it's got too many carbs, and you're going to potentially end up under eating the things that you really need, which are your proteins and fats.
And there's also the thing about, you know, when you first started, you just made jelly for the excuse to have more cream on top. Well, other people do, like, they'll make keto brownies, and because they're keto, they think, oh, well, I'll have one of these for breakfast. How fun is this? I'll have some brownies for breakfast. And although, yes, it's keto, and yes, it's low carb, and yes, it's high fat, there's no protein in it.
There's no protein in it. And yes, everyone's done it, including us. I think Christmas, was it Christmas Day or whatever? We had carrot cake for breakfast. but that's not something to be had on a daily basis. You know, breakfast today, what did you have today? You had bacon and something.
I actually had bacon and eggs.
You had bacon and eggs, right, okay.
The problem is that every time we talk about breakfast, we say we never have bacon and eggs. And then every day we do talk about it, we just happen to have bacon and eggs.
I had two chicken legs.
Yeah.
That was my breakfast.
Yesterday I had beef and stir-fried cabbage.
Yes, you did.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's something different to bacon and eggs.
That's the difference. But I suppose when you see the change in appetite, this is when you can start to see that actually living a low-carb keto lifestyle is more enjoyable, because you get this control over when you eat, and when you eat, you feel more satisfied rather than eating and then an hour later thinking, I need to eat again. So yeah. it feels, without the bloating, without the sort of, like, you know, again, my, say, breakfast, two chicken legs, that was great. And I felt great once I'd eaten it. So it's I suppose it's that edge of control, isn't it? Sort of, I suddenly feel like I've got a bit more control. I didn't track it, didn't need to track what I'd eaten. No carbs in that. You know, again, this comes back to sort of some of the issues when people are starting out about just using a tracker to hit a number. I've got to stay inside this. I've got, that doesn't allow for the days when, what was it? Wasn't yesterday, was it? A couple of days ago when I was really hungry, I had three full meals. A tracker wouldn't have let me do that. A tracker would have gone nuts had I eaten three full meals.
Yeah.
So,
well, I suppose, and on the topic of appetite changing, it's being okay with that and not worrying.
Oh, yeah.
So, some people, you get the same question, but in two different scenarios. So, I'm not hungry today.
What's wrong with me?
Am I doing anything wrong? And then you get the other people that have been like that for quite a while, and then they go, I've been really hungry today. What have I done
wrong?
Yeah,
what have I done wrong?
And you're like, nothing. You just need to eat or not eat, depending on your hunger signals. And it's learning how to read them, because a lot of people have suppressed them or just ignored them for so long.
So it's like the idea of having a bad day, bad weekend, and then saying, right, I am going to fast because I've had a bad day. That's forcing yourself into a fast to try and, well, obviously push the body into ketosis and try and sort of almost beat yourself up for what you've done for the weekend, rather than waking up and going, am I hungry? If I am, and if is it because of what's happened over the weekend, i.e. I've consumed more carbs or some junk. If I am hungry, then just get back to eating real food. it's a better signal than going, oh, I'm hungry, but I've had a bad weekend, therefore I'm going to go and fast. That's not creating a lifestyle. That's creating another bad habit, really, isn't it?
Mm.
So the appetite is an interesting thing, because you can't control... Well, so your hormones control your appetite, and they are based on basically what you've been eating or what you've been drinking. And drinking often does mean sugar-free. You know, are you drinking too many sugar-free drinks? I'm reading a great book at the moment that did a study on a group of people drinking sugared drinks. So this is America, so sugar soda,
mm-hmm.
diet soda, milk, water.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was on the same calories. It's just that they had these three things in place. The sugar people gained weight a lot. The diet people gained weight, but only a small amount. The milk people didn't gain weight, and the water people lost weight. All on the same calories.
Mm.
So the alternative that people often switch to, and again, this is probably something about sort of starting out, the alternative from going from a full sugar pop to a sugar-free pop, is that the danger is that the sweeteners that are in there can still have a reaction that make you want to eat more.
Yeah.
And it's the overuse of those things. It's sort of... Again, it's potentially replacing one bad habit with another bad habit.
Mm, instead of trying to break the cycle.
Instead of sort of saying, right, okay,
and
look.
I suppose you're not... No one's expecting you to break every cycle at the same time, because that's, again, setting yourself up for failure. As we said, we don't advise going straight from 200 to 20, because that in itself is trying to break several habits at once. So break one.
You can
habit
barely get to 20.
Another.
I mean, if you know, 20 means to me, it means two meals. You can do it in three if you're really clever about it. You could do three meals and stay under 20 grams of carbs. But for somebody starting out, you know, that's almost like one meal's going to be carnivore.
Yeah.
And most people, when they start out, are not ready for that.
So step one, remove the junk and decrease slowly. Step two is embrace the appetite changes.
Yeah, actually, that's a great way of saying it. Embrace the changes. Embrace it when you're not hungry, when you wake up, you think, I'm not hungry, therefore I can go and have a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and get on with my day. Or likewise, when you do wake up and go, I actually feel a bit hungry today, then recognize that might become a refeeding day, because you don't know how your appetite's going to be the next day.
Mm.
And feed yourself on the right things. You know, again, start with the protein and work outwards from there.
I suppose step three, you've already kind of touched on it, but it's ingredients.
Yeah. So, and this is the learning process, isn't it? When you start sort of low-carb keto, you're looking for alternatives on the supermarket shelf that are ready-made. They may be low-carb, and some items have also got a keto label on them. However, the ingredients are not. And the ingredients are the final, almost like the final piece, that when you start to really hone down on the best quality ingredients, you would look at a product that's containing some of the bulkers and the sweeteners, you know.
Well, like maltodextrin.
Yeah, there's lots of brands out there that we get them regularly posted in the group about sort of the keto protein shakes. So there's two or three now in supermarkets with a keto label on them. And just because they've got in them coconut oil or MCTs, it doesn't make them keto, because the some of the other ingredients are going to be the inflammatory ingredients, and the whole purpose of following a clean keto lifestyle is to remove the inflammatories as well, as many as possible. So this is where you start focusing on, you know, even when you sort of look at processed meat has still got, and it's only when you start looking at, somebody sent me an image, no, they put it in the group yesterday, image of some pork scratchings, and there was like four or five different ingredients there. You think, No. Mm. You know, there are, you know, pork scratchings by themselves. Do you know what? I've had them, plenty of them. Mm. But I won't buy them anymore. I won't buy a ready-made one anymore because they are full of inflammatories, whereas now I'll make my own.
And do you know what? Let's even...
But I suppose that's the journey, isn't it? That's
well,
the
yeah, I was going to say, let's use our own mega loaf, for example.
Hmm.
So on our website, there is mega loaf, there is mega rolls, there's mega pizza, and we are as clear as we possibly can that they are not clean keto because they contain gluten. They don't contain sunflower oil or, you know, any of the other inflammatory things, and they don't contain any sweeteners. The sugar is eaten by the yeast, but they do contain gluten. So, for someone who's going from step one and step two, they might be ideal.
Yep.
You know, going from 200 grams to 20 grams of carbs a day over that slow transition, they might be ideal. Or even if they're looking for a nice, you know, if they've got OMAD and they've got a nice burger and they want a roll mm-hmm. for it, then that'd be ideal as well if their appetite's reducing. But when you start looking at the ingredients, gluten might be something to avoid.
Yeah.
It doesn't agree with me, but yeah. You and Louis are fine.
Yeah.
And you have to learn what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah, and we're quite honest with that sort of product as well. Is treat it with respect. Have it rarely. Don't make it. Because if you, again, it's that's the habit forming, isn't it? Oh, I can have this low-carb bread, therefore I can have it every day.
Mm.
Rather than...
Or the classic, they see, let's say, the Marvel Celebration cake. And they see the macros on the recipe. And they go, oh, it's only, I don't know what it is, but like 2-3 grams of carbs per slice. That means I can have 10 slices in a day.
Mm.
You're like, that's not how it works.
Mm.
Just because it's low carb doesn't, I mean, think about it logically. Don't look at numbers. Look at the item of food. It's a cake.
Yeah.
It's not a steak.
Yeah.
That rhymed. And yes, it might not be a shop-bought cake full of sugar and flour, but it's also not got the high-quality proteins
no,
that you need.
No, exactly. And it will still contain sweeteners, and it still can trigger extra eating.
And I'd really like to see you try and eat 10 slices of that and then, you know, have a normal day and not stay near the bathroom.
No.
Because that would not be nice. There's the three steps.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of... It's sort of fine tuning as you come down, rather than trying to go from the from starting point to finished product in the space of a day or a week. You know, the fine tuning is which of the low carb veggies agree with you, because they don't all with everybody. So, you know, where's you making the swaps? Which ones sort of you enjoy the most? Which ones can you sort of, you know, as Ella said to me yesterday, I've gone on an asparagus sort of trip at the moment. I have asparagus with almost every meal, and I love it. It's great. So, you know, that learning journey first, then sort of like the understanding of, well, my appetite will, most days, my appetite will be controlled. I maybe only eat once or twice a day. And that's fine. And that's something we have to get ahead around. But then we also get ahead around the fact that one or two days in a week or in a month, your appetite might be more than usual, and responding to that. So, and again, that's your opportunity to actually sort of, you know, remind the body that you're not trying to starve it. Because if you're in a calorie deficit for sort of, you know, a week or 2 weeks, and then you ignore that sign where you are hungry and you go, no, I'm only eating twice today, well, you've just told the body you're starving it, rather than using that opportunity to sort of do a little bit of a refeed day. And then that final step is then starts to sort of hone in on the ingredients. Are there too many sweeteners? Are there too many inflammatories? What is it that makes you feel good, and what is it that changes that? You know, again, we know that people will try and include alcohol in this journey. But at some point when you've had it, you'll realise that it might not make you feel great anymore. Mm. So then you've got the choice there.
It's also, when you're talking about work out what low-carb veggies suit you, it's also the other macros as well. So three of us eat fairly clean because of the things that you buy in.
Yeah.
You don't really buy in a lot of processed stuff. But I know that the leaner meats suit me better than the fatty meats.
Yep.
And Louis knows that the mega doesn't really affect him, so he likes having it every now and then.
Yeah. He can consume way more dairy.
Yeah, you know that if you eat protein too late, you don't sleep.
If I eat protein too late, I did it. What did I do last night?
I told you.
What did we do last night? We trained. I ate afterwards, and what did I do? I woke up and I was still digesting my bloody protein.
Yeah. You need to eat like four.
I do. I do, and I've said it too many times and not acted on it. Yeah, I'm just gonna have to go with it, aren't I?
Mm.
But it's so it's because we do a 6 o'clock training session. PT session, it's when to eat. I do nearly all of my training in a fasted state, and in fact that's the only session of the week.
Maybe you try you've not been doing 40 hour fast recently because of your marathon training
and the weightlifting.
Yeah, but maybe you try it, see how it works, or try eating OMAD but I'm gonna, breakfast.
I was just thinking that sort of like midday. Do a OMAD there.
I think that was our cue to wrap up. The camera just stopped recording. I quite liked this episode. I think it would be good if we had a few more chats like this. So if you have any questions, leave them in the comments. Wherever you are. I suppose, actually, if you're listening to this, come and find us on one of the social media platforms, because you can't comment on a podcast. But if you're on YouTube, then you can. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
There we go. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you in episode 12, whenever that is, and whoever that's with. I don't know. See you later.